This is First Up. Every morning, come and hang on First Up. The only show that brings the bang. It's First Up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
The third hour, First Up here on TSN 1050. Make sure to download the iHeartRadio Canada app so you could stream us wherever you are. You're in the car, you're at work, you're at home. Download the app and take TSN 1050 with you. It's Aaron Korolnik and Dave Festruck from the Toronto Star, who's in for Carlo Koliakovo. Coco will be back tomorrow morning. And Dave, I'm sure Nazem Kadri, who had himself a hell of a night, he continued his hot streak. That guy's been as good as anybody in the NHL. He was actually named the third star for the month of November yesterday. Kadri had two goals last night for Colorado. I'm sure there was some money on the board for Kadri. His Avs back in Toronto. I mean, I'm sure. And you could just tell Kadri was fired up from the outset. And his media pregame availability is like, he's as good as it gets in the NHL.
He really is.
Sarcastic. He's funny. He's honest. That's, very rare with NHL players. I really enjoy everything about Nazem Kadri these days, and he put on a show, but it was not the Nazem Kadri story. It was the Toronto Maple Leafs story, an 8-3 win over the Colorado Avalanche, and remarkable stuff. Like, it really has been remarkable, and listen, there's always going to be the skeptics, and rightfully so, but I think there's no denying this team is playing as well as we've seen in a very long time. And that is an exciting proposition for any Leafs fan. But on the other side with Toronto sports, the Raptors not exactly inspiring the same type of confidence in their abilities, both in the present and in the future. And they're coming off a ugly loss to the Memphis Grizzlies.
Oh.
And a game in which the Raptors were only able to muster 91 points against the worst defensive team in the NBA. Does not really get any easier tonight, and the Milwaukee Bucks, they're in town, the defending NBA champions. Giannis coming off a 40-point performance last night at home against the Charlotte Hornets. A weird kind of scheduling quirk and advantageous for the Raps, I would say, in that Milwaukee playing at home, flying to Toronto late last night, probably landing, 2 o'clock in the morning?
Yep.
So maybe they'll get a tired Milwaukee team, but I don't care how tired the Bucks are. It's a tough test for the Raps without some significant players in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, this is a scheduling advantage. There's no doubt about it for the Toronto Raptors. But you look in the Vegas books, I think it's still Milwaukee's still favored by 4 or 5 points, even though they're coming off the back-to-back and the Raptors haven't played since Tuesday night, which should be regularly a big, big advantage. But to your point, AK, you got Gary Trent Jr., who missed the game against Memphis. He is questionable to play today. Did participate in practice, so you got to think there's a chance he gets out there. OG Anunoby and Cam Birch, who, of course, missed the previous game, taking out in those three players, 44 and a half points a game with OG, Gary Trent Jr., and Cam Birch not around. The Raptors just don't have anybody, AK, who can step in off the bench and supply the points that those guys supply. They got the worst bench in the NBA by point production. Nick Nurse doesn't have a lot of faith in it, so they don't play very much. I think he plays his bench the least in the NBA by minutes played. This is going to be a very tough night for the Raptors with Giannis in prime form and the Bucks kind of finding their legs defending that championship.
Not a lot of clarity on the OG Anunoby front. It seems like he's been listed as questionable for at least 5 games, and he's practicing, and we'll see how he looks game time, and then he doesn't play, and now Nick Nurse recently saying the injury is not getting any better, and I'm not a hip specialist by any stretch of the imagination, but this is a significant hip point or injury at this point where, it's not even a contemplation for OG Anunoby to be in the lineup tonight against Milwaukee. I don't really know what's going on with him, but I can tell you he's probably their most important player. We know what a great defender is. He's averaging almost 20 points a game. It's having a breakout season. It's really disappointing to see him be out as long as he has been. He's a tough guy, too. I mean, we've seen him fight through injuries in the past. This must be something that's really afflicting him. And an odd situation with OG where not a lot of intel on exactly what's been going on, but clearly it's just not progressing the way that the Raptors expected, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what to expect from the way of the flow of information on an injury like that. Like, he shows up to practice, he gets his treatment, he probably tries and, you know, shoots a few buckets and it doesn't feel good, and he's just saying, hey, I'm not ready to go. Like, it's a hip pointer, it's hurting. I agree with you. He is an absolutely essential piece for this team at this particular moment. And if he's not the most important player on this roster, it's Fred VanVleet. And I got to say, as somebody who's, been a big admirer of Fred VanVleet, and I think probably pretty much everybody that watches this team over the past handful of years is in that camp, because he's a guy that's difficult not to admire. I'm concerned for Fred VanVleet, AK, because the weight that's being piled on that young man's shoulders, and I know he's getting well compensated to carry it, it's a lot, man. Like, he's playing more than anybody in the NBA. And then you saw what you saw with the Memphis Grizzlies, where they put the long and lanky and aggressive Dylan Brooks on Fred VanVleet and hounded him all night. That's the way you beat the Toronto Raptors. You torture Fred VanVleet.
Yeah.
And that's going to be very tough on Fred VanVleet. Because let's be honest here, Fred VanVleet does not create something out there. There's nobody else that's going to.
There's no doubt, especially with Ananobi on the sidelines and Gary Trent a question mark. They're going to need to rely on guys like Yuta Watanabe and Svi Mihailuk and Malachi Flynn, and that is not a winning formula.
Pascal Siakam should be creating more, but he's unfortunately not creating enough.
Yeah, so he's going to need to really step up tonight. Let's hear from Fred VanVleet, who is addressing the Raptors' struggles on their home court, which have been perplexing to say the least, considering the Raptors play in Tampa last year. Masai Ujiri comes out and blames that as one of the reasons that they had such a poor season. And now the Raptors are back home. You know, crowds are back to what they once were, and the Raptors 2-8 on their home floor. Here's VanVleet with his rationale on that.
I mean, it's just disappointing to lose. It really doesn't have anything to do with being home, to be honest with you. Like, we could play on Pluto for all I care. Like, it's just, it's disappointing to lose anytime. We expect to win around here. We have high standards, and that's not going to change. So with that being said, you would like to get more wins for your home crowd, a crowd that hasn't seen you in, over a year. But, we're not going out there trying to lose. It's just the situation we're in. So, it's going to be some ups and downs for sure.
It's a young team that's missing a couple of its best players. I think this is not to be unexpected at all. And we should also mention that a former Toronto Raptor, perhaps the greatest Raptor in franchise history, has taken his talents to South Beach and joined the Miami Heat. And yesterday it was announced that the NBA has penalized the Chicago Bulls, who had early free agent discussions with Lonzo Ball, who, according to Carlo, sucks, and Kyle Lowry for their early free agent discussions with Miami Heat. So this penalty, so severe. I'm not sure Miami or Chicago will be able to recover from having to forfeit a second-round draft pick, Dave. Can you believe that Adam Silver came down so hard, and yes, I'm being sarcastic, so hard on Chicago and Miami? What a joke. Like, so worthless. These are picks in like the 50s or like maybe high 40s in the 50s in the NBA draft. I mean, how many of those hit? I mean, it's just stupid.
It's totally stupid. I mean, imposing penalties on Chicago and Miami because discussions around free agency, breached the deadline, right? Like, they were premature discussions, which we all know happen because we all know it's impossible that these deals are arrived at 2 minutes after the free agency window opens. So I'm not sure exactly what the league's trying to do here. Like, they're not going to stop the fact that teams are going to be discussing these deals before they're supposed to be discussing these deals. I mean, we're still waiting on, as far as I can tell, we're still waiting on the results of the so-called league investigation of the free agency around Kawhi Leonard.
Exactly.
Which the commissioner himself acknowledged came with accusations of agreements made outside the collective bargaining agreement of extras, let's say, that Uncle Dennis and Kawhi Leonard had been asking for from various teams, including the Toronto Raptors, and eventually, you assume, probably got with the LA Clippers, but we haven't seen the results of that investigation. So these so-called internal investigations where, let's think about this, AK, Adam Silver works for the owners. So his league office is going to investigate the owners that he works for. Mm-hmm. How do you think that's going to go?
That's what we call a conflict of interest, Dave.
Yeah,
and you think the second-round pick loss is going to deter other teams from going out and getting the top free agents on the market? I know Chicago loving what they've seen from Lonzo Ball, and obviously Miami loves having Kyle Lowry as part of their franchise. So the penalties, and I use the word penalties in with quotations because not exactly too penal of a situation for those teams. So, yeah, that's a fascinating situation. The Kawhi story, going back to that, I think it was Ramona Shelburne from ESPN who had the whole thing documented somehow, how Kawhi was holding meetings in his house in L.A. and talking to Paul George and then talking to the Raptors about making a trade for, like, it was so convoluted and so completely against the spirit of the collective bargaining agreement. This man was holding basically the entire NBA hostage at the time. And listen, we had all the ammo to do so. I mean, that guy was coming off and being the NBA Finals MVP, being putting together one of the great postseasons in the history of the sport. So, yeah, he was able to do it. And it's kind of remarkable that in the years subsequent to that, kind of, I mean, the injury we know he suffered to his knee and kind of flaming out in the playoffs alongside Paul George could have had a long-term thing here in Toronto. It's a real shame that that never transpired.
Yeah, I remember, you think back to it, like his best chance at multiple titles was staying in Toronto. We all know that. That team would have been the favorite to win the NBA championship in the year after they won it. They won it in 2019. They would have been the favorite to win it in 2020 if Kawhi had stayed. There's no doubt about that. Instead, he chose geography and weather, essentially. Weather won the Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes. And I guess home, you could say, because he is a California guy. You got to give him that. But I'm talking about, AK, beyond the way Kawhi, you know, disrupted another franchise by plucking their star player, Paul George, from the Oklahoma City Thunder. And beyond the way the Uncle Dennis and Kawhi's entourage held the NBA hostage, I'm talking about the fact that there were accusations that there were incentives beyond salary and very lucrative incentives beyond salary, allegedly, that were being bandied about in the Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes. And that's what the commissioner was talking about, because guess what? The other owners were not happy that what happened to be the richest owner of them all, Steve Ballmer, ended up with the guy in that scenario. And it's not hard to imagine how the pocket lint in Steve Ballmer's jeans would be very enticing in terms of being thrown around as an incentive beyond the salary capped compensation that any given player would get. So That's why I'm scoffing the way you're scoffing at NBA investigations and these kinds of dealings, because to me it's just fruitless. You're not going to stop what's happening. I think they want to stop the idea that there's outside incentives that make the salary cap a mockery, and that every owner in the world outside maybe Steve Ballmer wants to stop that because that could get expensive. But it's just very tough to police, and it's just hard to imagine there's going to be any effective way to do it.
Hey, Kawhi, you like Microsoft shares? I could probably find a couple for you somewhere in my stock trading account.
Well, people say, like, I mean, who knows what goes on, but all of a sudden you see, you notice that Shaq O'Neal is a big, and having a million endorsements. So I don't know if there's any former athlete that has more endorsements than Shaquille O'Neal. One of them is Carnival Cruises, which is owned by the Miami Heat.
Yes,
which
indeed.
Which somehow
Mickey
acquired
Harrison,
Shaquille O'Neal. And won a couple of NBA titles with him. It's interesting how that all works. I wonder how he got that deal.
The politics of the NBA, unparalleled as far as the backdoor dealings go. And I think you just cited a couple of examples about why it's the most intriguing league as far as what's going on behind the scenes and perhaps on the court as well. Well, another intriguing league, of course, the National Football League. And we've got a really cool matchup tonight between the Dallas Cowboys and the New Orleans Saints. And we'll be joined by our ESPN NFL reporter, Ed Warder, live from New Orleans, coming up on the other side. You're listening to First Up, Aaron Korolnik and Dave Feschuk in for Carlo Colaiacomo this morning.
I feel ready.
Every Thursday morning from ESPN.
We ready.
For Ed Warder. That's right. Carlo's away today, so I get to do We Ready and welcome in our good friend Ed Werder from ESPN, Aaron Karolnik, and Dave Festchuk with you this morning. Ed, live from the crawfish capital of the United States, New Orleans, Louisiana. I think it's the crawfish capital. Ed, have you had crawfish yet this morning?
I'm not really into biting the heads off of insects this early in the day.
Save it for lunch, at least. You got to at least cross 11 a.m.
I'm trying to make it through my first cup of Starbucks. That's hard enough.
Oh, beautiful. Well, Ed, it's a big one tonight in New Orleans.
Yeah.
The Saints hosting the Dallas Cowboys. That is amongst the reasons why you're present for the game this evening. And Taysom Hill, a man we've discussed a lot on this radio show over the last couple of years, a kind of a super utility player for New Orleans. He just got a new contract extension, and now he is QB1 tonight against Dallas. What are you expecting from Taysom Hill in his return tonight?
Well, it's interesting because, as you mentioned, he's, you know, kind of a jack of all trades. He's only played 167 snaps this year because he had a concussion injury, and now he's got this foot injury that's kept him out the last couple of weeks. He's only taken 30 snaps at quarterback this year. He's taken twice that many snaps at wide receiver and an equal number of snaps at tight end. I just really think that this is an attempt by Sean Payton to create some offense. You know, they've lost four straight games under Trevor Siemian, who's really limited. I mean, he's a, you know, he can hand it off and he's a good, you know, thrower to open receivers, but they haven't been able to create that with all the injuries that they've had. You know, Michael Thomas hasn't played this season. Alvin Kamara, we still don't know if he's going to play tonight. They could be without both their starting tackles again. So the one thing that Taysom Hill can do is he can create offense on his own. And there are some people in the Saints organization who think that Sean Payton should really do what the Eagles have done with Jalen Hurts and just, you know, run the quarterback, run the ball 50 times, dominate time of possession, keep the score down, let the defense try to make a play, kind of ugly it up and see if they can win some games that way. And Taysom Hill has had some success as a starting quarterback. You know, last year he went 3-1 in his starts, but the thing that was essential to his success is kind of what I suggested. It's that Dennis Allen's defense was able to control opponents. They only scored an average of 13 points a game last year, opponents did, in the four games that Taysom Hill started. So they've got to play nearly flawless football for Taysom Hill to be able to put enough points on the board for the Saints to have some kind of success.
So we got the Thursday night game tonight, Ed. We got a slate of games on Sunday, as per usual. But we got the game on Monday night. And filling in for Carlo Koliakovo today, Ed. Carlo, of course, a registered member of the Bills Mafia. I got to ask you, what do you make of this matchup? I think preseason, Ed, I think a lot of people, if you would have said the Patriots are going to win the AFC East, you know, you would have considered they were, you know, Patriot fanboys like our producer, Arad. And yet, there they are, the Bill Belichick Patriots, the Mac Jones Patriots at the top of that division. What do you make of this matchup, and how do the Bills get it back on the rails?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, probably for the first 6 weeks of the season, the Bills were the most dominant team in the NFL. They ranked second in scoring offense, first in scoring defense, and first in, you know, point differential. And the Patriots in the last 6 weeks during the six-game winning streak, they lead the NFL in all three of those categories. And so it's like suddenly the Patriots have turned into what the Bills were early in the season, and the Bills' chances of winning the division were at like 99% through week six when they were 4-2 and the Patriots are 2-4. And now the odds have completely flipped with the Patriots having a 67% chance of beating the Bills out for the division. And I just think obviously the thing that Bill Belichick always provided Tom Brady was, you know, a great defense. When they had their best teams, not only did they have the best quarterback in football, but Belichick, you know, made it relatively simple by having a defense that was among the best in the league in allowing the fewest points. And so, you know, Brady scored 20 points, they're going to win the game. Well, they're kind of that way now. And then what Josh McDaniels has done and, you know, creating offense and developing a young quarterback and Mac Jones, I mean, they've won three straight games by 20 points with a rookie quarterback.
Incredible.
And the only other team to do that was the Seahawks with Russell Wilson in 2012. So hadn't happened in 10 years what the Patriots have done to this point. And the Bills just, you know, the one thing they have to do is they got to quit turning the ball over. That's essential because the Patriots are the number one team in football in turnover differential during the six-game winning streak. And the Bills are one of two teams that have turned the ball over multiple times in at least six or more consecutive games.
In conversation with Ed Werder, our ESPN NFL analyst. And Ed, you know this game on Monday night is in Buffalo, not too far for us to travel from Toronto to Buffalo. So we were talking internally as a team here on First Up about the idea of going to Buffalo for the game. But Carlo Colaiacovo, who is away today, I don't mean to, you know, disparage him on his day off. And you know what, Ed, I'm going to leave it to you to determine if this is indeed disparagement. Carlo did not want to sit outside at the game. He would only go if he had a box. Can you be a real Bills fan if you refuse to attend a game outdoors on Monday Night Football against the Patriots? He would only go if he had a box. What do you make of that?
That seems like an odd mindset for a former hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ed.
Don't you think? I mean, I guess the only justification would be if he says, I only want to attend this game as a working journalist and sit in the press box and behave in a very professional manner and be objective as I view this game. And yet I don't think that's what he would intend to do at all.
Not at all. So, great story on that.
I agree. We should disparage him on his day off for even entertaining such thoughts.
Great story on that. I'm glad you brought up the idea of a working journalist, Ed, because Carlo and I attended Game 5 of the NBA Finals in Toronto together. And we were sitting on press row for some reason. And the esteemed NBA Hall of Fame writer Jackie McMullen was seated right above us. And Carlo and I are going crazy. You know, Raptors hit a three. We're cheering. And Jackie leans over to Carlo. She's like, you might want to relax a little bit. This is for journalists. And we decided to leave and go sit somewhere else. So to avoid the scorn of legend Jackie.
So Carlo, Ed could cheer when, you know, Kevin Durant ripped his Achilles apart.
That did happen as well.
Well, to your point, I would think Carlo, being the fan that he is of everything Buffalo Bills, and like you said, certified card-carrying member of the Bills Mafia, I think he'd already have his RV in the parking lot up there.
Exactly.
You would assume exactly. So, but obviously with a very, 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 very proficient heating system that would keep him nice and warm, Ed, in the chilly climes of December up here in the Northeast. So,
I've never heard of a hockey player being afraid of the cold.
Well, yeah, you now know one. You know one of them.
Carlo's unique.
He is indeed. Ed Werder is our guest from ESPN. We saw a very lackluster performance from Russell Wilson, another in the line of lackluster performances from that Seahawks offense. They have been terrible of late. And there's a lot of questions now, Ed, around the NFL about the future of Russell Wilson, the future of Pete Carroll. What do you make of, let's start with Wilson's future. How likely do you think it is that he's back in Seattle, considering two things, the poor performance of him as a quarterback for that team recently, but also all the rumors over the past offseason that he wanted out? What do you make of the Wilson situation going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that at one point during the offseason, shortly after the Super Bowl last year, that Russell Wilson saw what Tom Brady did in Tampa and the way the organization supported him in terms of getting personnel and giving him a chance to win another Super Bowl, that had an effect on Russell Wilson's willingness to remain the quarterback of the Seahawks. And I think the way that they have played makes the Seahawks probably more willing to contemplate moving on from Russell Wilson, who's, you know, 33 years old now. Obviously, they don't have any draft picks because of the trade they made for Jamal Adams, who seemingly is not being used in an effective way like he was last year when they first acquired him and he got healthy. So I do think that it is far more possible that Russell Wilson is traded this offseason than a year ago. I know Pete Carroll has said the relationship's never been better, but Russell Wilson he can't make it happen with what he has around him there. And I just keep thinking, as I've been here in New Orleans, Sean Payton has got to get himself a quarterback. That's got to be the number one objective of this organization in the offseason. And they're in a bad way in terms of the cap, but Russell Wilson would be such a perfect fit in New Orleans with Sean Payton. So I do think Russell probably gets traded this offseason for a lot of reasons. But his declining play, I think, puts them in a position where they got to question how much longer they can be at the top of the league with him, given his advanced age and given, you know, their cap situation. I think they move on from Russell Wilson this offseason for sure.
But how much of what we're seeing from Wilson, Ed, in your mind, is just this hand injury? He can't seems like he can't grip the ball the way he normally does. And is that a factor, or are we just being too kind if we're allowing him that leniency?
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame Russell Wilson for everything. I mean, Seattle's lost four straight. You know, that's their longest losing streak ever with Russell Wilson being the starting quarterback. And they've only scored 45 points. By far, their fewest in any four games under Russell Wilson. So that speaks not only about his declining performance since coming back from that finger surgery, but just what a poor group of offense they have around him. Obviously, Shane Waldron's the first-year offensive coordinator. So now you question, should they have, you know, moved on from Brian Schottenheimer as the offensive coordinator last year, even though that's what Russell Wilson seemingly wanted? You know, they embraced Shane Waldron, who was coming over from Sean McVay and the Rams and trying to create that kind of offense for Wilson. I just don't think they have a lot of talent. Obviously, they don't protect the quarterback very well. Does have two really good receivers, but they just haven't been able to do anything with it. I mean, they haven't been able to sustain, you know, possessions, much less score points. They're averaging under 25 minutes time of possession this season. Only one team in the last 45 years has averaged under 25 minutes time of possession. And that was the 1999 Browns in their first year back in the elite.
Yeah.
So this, I mean, they've gone from one of the best offensive teams in all of football to one of the worst in history in one year.
Exactly. No, it's incredible. Now, one of the other reasons, of course, they get the banged up backfield. They've brought in 36-year-old Adrian Peterson, the Seahawks have, to see what he might have left. They've added him to their practice squad, which has brought up an interesting debate, Ed, about, you know, we're seeing so many injuries to high-profile, highly-paid running backs this season. We saw, obviously, Christian McCaffrey out for the season. We've seen Dalvin Cook get hurt. We've seen Ezekiel Elliott limping in that Thanksgiving Day game. We've seen Derrick Henry and Alvin Kamara miss time with injuries.
Yeah.
And it's brought up the eternal debate, Ed, and I wonder where you stand on it nowadays about should you pay big money for a running back in the NFL given the precariousness of that position. How do you see that?
Well, I think we've seen that position be, you know, greatly devalued in recent years. Teams don't draft those players generally very high anymore, and they're certainly reluctant in all but a few exceptions of giving them a second contract. But I mean, we've seen the Titans have great success building their entire offense around a punishing, you know, running back. He's out now, but they've had great success for a number of years. So I've kind of always been, because I witnessed the 90s Cowboys dynasty and I saw the importance of Emmitt Smith to Troy Aikman, that arguably he was the key component in that offense. And I saw, you know, firsthand John Elway struggle to win Super Bowls until he had Terrell Davis. And they had some offensive balance. And I've seen, really, look at the decline of the Cowboys this year.
Yep.
You know, they've lost three out of four games, and a large part of that is because they haven't been able to run the football. The thing they talked about early in the year was, hey, whatever a defense takes away from us, we can do the other thing at such a high level, whether it's, you know, we're forced to throw or we're forced to run, we can do it at such a high level. We can still score points and win games. Well, that they've become much more one-dimensional. I think you have to have some level of balance. And so I do think you have to have a really good running game. I'm not sure you have to draft the guy in the top 10 or have one of the 10 highest paid guys. The durability is really the issue. I think everybody would want, you know, an a Christian McCaffrey or an Ezekiel Elliott or Dalvin Cook on their team. But yeah, it's a tough position to play and sustain any kind of, you know, success at because of the injury factor. But I think the running back position is probably more important than most people think.
It'll be fascinating to see how Zeke and Tony Pollard fare against New Orleans defense, which I believe limits opposing running backs to the fewest yards per carry of any team in the National Football League. Ed, thank you so much for doing this, and try not to go too crazy on Bourbon Street tonight, okay?
I'll try to hold it down. Thanks very much.
All right.
Good to talk to you guys.
That's Ed Werder from ESPN ahead of Cowboys and the Saints on Thursday Night Football. We have James Duthie from TSN and the Rubber Boots podcast coming up on the other side. Who knows what we'll get to with JD? I imagine the name Tiger Woods will come up, and certainly the red-hot Toronto Maple Leafs. That's all coming up on First Up. First Up continues here on TSN 1050, streaming worldwide, tsn1050.ca. We've been talking a lot about Tim Biebs this morning, and they are a revelation. Honestly, I went into a Tim Hortons yesterday, Dave, and Dave Festruck from The Star is in for Carlo this morning, and I don't know if it has anything to do with Bieber. It could be purely coincidental, but there were lineups out the door, and I think mass producing these Bieber Timbits, I don't know, but it's a very impressive marketing campaign, and perhaps once the Tim Biebs are over, they could go with Jim Biebs in honor of our next guest, James Duthie from TSN and the Rubber Boots podcast. James, your thoughts?
My thoughts are that they could certainly get me a lot cheaper. I know you two guys are like me. You've been thinking, how much did Tim Hortons offer up to get the Biebs? Like, what's the number on that? 10 schmil?
Great question.
Hey?
I mean, that's, if it's 10 mil, I mean, that's a hell of a deal for Tim Hortons.
More?
Gotta be light. Yeah, I think that's
the guy
light.
He doesn't do a lot of ads, right? Anyway, big money. You can have Jim Bits for just
Jim Bits.
Two free
there you
boxes.
Go.
Two free boxes.
Yeah, a couple of Tim Hortons gift cards. Well,
yeah, we're there.
I mean, we did see. James Duthie's our guest. I think I already said that. But in any case, we did see the Maple Leafs release a video yesterday of all the players trying out the Tim Biebs and giving them a rating, which ones they like the most. And it was interesting to know that Kyle Dubas tried all three Timbits after saying, no, I'm only going to have one. But he had three. And perhaps the trio of Timbits he ate inspired Austin Matthews to record his fourth career hat trick last night, JD. And, of course, we've been talking about the Leafs, their 8-3 win over Colorado. I mean, another incredible performance from this team, now winning 15 of 17. What are your thoughts on the Leafs? Because there's a lot of people, including those in Vegas, who now have installed the Leafs as the betting favorites to win the Stanley Cup.
Have they really? You see, if I were the Leafs, and I'm sure they would say this anyway, ignore all of that. But I would say if you're a Leafs fan, you have to soak up all of this. This morning, right now, 15-2, first place, and the way they are playing, is this not the regular season high point of the Leafs for what? The last decade? The last 15 years? Festchuk, you're better with the history than me.
Because
I don't know that there's been a run like this. We talked at length at the beginning of the season, and I really do think if we play amateur psychologists that there was a big hangover from last year, and there was a sense of no matter what we do this season, it's not going to matter, and so how are we going to get through the season after what we did in the spring? I really feel like that sort of went through the team the first couple of weeks, and then at some point they realized we can't do anything about what happened against Montreal now, and we can't do anything about, more importantly, what's going to happen in May and June and early July, maybe, this year. So we might as well go out and play and enjoy ourselves for the next 6 months, and I think that's exactly what's happened. So while every conversation we have has to have the asterisk of it's the regular season and this means nothing until the playoffs, and that is accurate, you can't do anything about the playoffs now, and I think that they've figured out that mentality, and it's amazing to watch. Like, up and down the lineup, Matthews, is unbelievable. Marner looks like the Marner of old. Bunting seems like the best fit on that line. Tavares, who felt snake bit to me for basically a year and a half, is finally, everything's going in. Nylander looks like a beast. Kerfoot looks like a really good fit on that second line. The depth guys are good. I love watching Jason Spezza every night. Richie fits in well on the fourth line. The D's good, and the goaltender's first in the league in wins, and I think third in save percentage and goals against average. So I can't think of a better point in a regular season coming off that win last night over a I would say the majority of people's picks as Stanley Cup favorite before the season than right here, right now. So you might as well enjoy it because there's nothing else you can do until the playoffs start.
So, Duthie, we got to get your take on another big development in the sports world this week. We're talking about Tiger Woods. And AK and I were bandying this about listening to his press conference from down in the Bahamas. We're both in the camp that Tiger Woods is snowing everybody, or at least attempting to, that he is setting expectations exceptionally low, talking about how he doesn't think he's going to ever be a regular on tour again, and it's going to be a mountain to climb, an Everest of sorts for him to ever get back to playing the kind of golf that he's been accustomed to playing. And yet we see a swing video yesterday where he looks pretty good to me.
Right.
Where do you see Tiger Woods landing in the months and years to come?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because I watched every second of that long interview he did the other day, the first interview that he'd done. And he did kind of sell me a little bit that, okay, I have to temper my expectations, because I was thinking after he posted the first video, just that one swing with a look like a wedge or a mid iron that he was playing in the Masters in April. And I sort of bought it for a second, Festchuk, and I'm with you. As soon as I saw the full swing with whatever that was, a hybrid or a three wood or something yesterday, it looked pretty darn good. And I think that's the smart look. Tiger Woods is extremely smart, particularly in his dealings with the media, and extremely careful. So I believe I'm with you too. I think it's an undersell completely, because why would you say, hey, I'm going to be back, I hope you'll be back full tour, and then you're setting people up for something. So I think when he says, you know, I'll play a tournament here or there, that probably means, you know, 10 tournaments a year, all of the majors, you know, the WGC, the World Championship events, and a couple of others probably, to me, which is kind of what he did anyway, right?
Right.
Maybe, you'd have to look, AK, you might know better than me, like in the last couple of years before the injuries, let's say the year he ended up winning the Tour Championship there, that big crowd on the last day, that great scene before, the year before the Masters, I don't know how many events he played, but I think safely he's fair in saying that he's never going to do that again. But if Tiger Woods is out there for all the events that matter, I mean, we don't give a crap about most of the others anyway. So I think, to me, that seems realistic. Now, maybe we're being unfair, Festchuk, to him that way. By, like, it is incredible, like, the recovery that he's been through here. And if I had to bet right now, like, I don't know, AK, is there a wager on whether he'll play in the Masters this year? I probably say no.
Not that I've seen. Not that I've seen. You don't think he's going to play in the Masters? Oh, I'm certain he's going to play in the Masters.
This year's Masters.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, you and Puffy will be standing right behind the 17th green on CBS, and Tiger will be
You're probably right. I guess the one thing I would say is, I hope we do. It's hard not to get excited when you see a video like that yesterday and knowing what he's done, but I hope we are all collectively able to temper our expectations if he does, let's say the Masters is his first event back this year, because, you know, he doesn't have to, like, just playing to me is already, you know, not on a par with what he did in 19 winning the Masters, but, you know, it's pretty close. So if he shows up and, you know, shoots in the 70s both days, I don't care if it's 78, 76 or something like that, to me that's an unbelievable accomplishment. And I just hope we aren't expecting him to win the Masters in April if he does show up, because I don't think he has to do that for it to be a remarkable story this time around.
James Duthie from TSN and the Rubber Boots podcast is our guest here on First Up. And I think you can make a lot of parallels between Tiger Woods' recovery and your own recovery, JD, from hernia surgery.
Very similar.
How much concern do you have about your ability to hit that tight draw off the tee amidst your recovery from the procedure you had done a couple of weeks ago?
I wanted to say, what is the name of the reporter who did that interview with Tiger the other day, the big exclusive for Golf Digest? I can't remember her name. But AK, when I am ready to compete again, I will do the Zoom with you. Okay?
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, that's exciting.
I don't know who would air it in Canada. Yeah. Maybe like
who would air it? Yeah, that is the real question.
What is it? Score Golf, maybe?
Maybe I don't know
Adam
how desperate
Stanley
they are for
would
content.
Retweet it.
Adam Stanley. It's well done.
I'm doing slow phantom rotations in my living room right now. I'm at that point, so it's a big step. Should I post a video of me doing
it? I'll analyze it, yeah. We'll get Zucchino in weeks to break it down on Golf Talk Canada every Monday morning on TSN.
I went to the gym for the first time since hernia surgery yesterday, so progress is being made.
I love to hear it.
There weren't a lot of paparazzi there, though.
JD, we talked last week about how you were headed to Regina, Saskatchewan to cover the West semifinal between the Riders and the Stamps. That was a hell of a game, and I know you're headed to Winnipeg this week to see the Bombers and the Riders. And you did post a picture on social media of you, I believe it was at the Keg, watching Lindsay Hamilton host the Leafs panel in your place. When
yeah,
you
I
see
appreciated
others,
the tweet that you you replied to that with.
Yeah.
The Wally Pipp tweet. That was
well,
kind
I
of
mean,
you.
When you see others, and let me speak personally, when there's someone else filling in for me, I guess I've only been doing this job for a couple of weeks, let's say Mark Rowe's in. I hope Mark Rowe has a dreadful show. I don't want him to succeed in my stead. Do you have those same feelings when you see Lindsay Hamilton?
TSN team guy.
Yeah,
look,
so,
I'm used to it now because, first of all, over the last, let's say, I don't know, 8-9 years, when I have missed games, which I occasionally do in other sports, they always replace me with extremely talented women. Andy has replaced me numerous times, who's obviously excellent. Lindsay, and I get, you know, all the time you get nothing but tweets of, oh, I'd much rather, you know, this is much better than looking at you, sort of thing.
That is true.
Yes. Well, I know it is accurate, but no, Lindsay Hamilton's great, and I try at this point in my career to have enough security, AK. But no, I know what you mean. Yeah, once in a while, I hope she just trips up really horrendously.
So you're heading out to. You're heading
she
out
never
to,
does. Sorry.
No,
go ahead.
She never will. She never will, Duffy. But you're heading out to you know, fabulous Winnipeg, as we call it. And we were having some fun earlier. JD talking to Ed Werder about Carlo. Of course, I'm filling in for Carlo today on the show. And Carlo had said on the show earlier that he would not go to the Monday Night Football game in Orchard Park, New York, the game of the week. It's, of course, Patriots, Bills in Orchard Park. And Carlo would not go, he told his good friend AK here, unless he could get a seat indoors in a box. In other words, he would not sit outside in the December chill in Buffalo. Where do you stand, or sit for that matter, James, on outdoor sporting events at this point in your life?
Well, that's an embarrassment, first of all, for a professional athlete who grew up in Canada.
Or a Bills fan. Or a Bills fan.
Carlo said that.
Yes.
He did.
Yeah, that's a joke. You profess to be this massive fan of the Bills, and you pull that off. That's an embarrassment. Now, like I always tell people, you know, I try to play the tough guy and say, yeah, I'm out there for, like in Winnipeg on Sunday, I will be on the air. You know, I'll have to be in the stadium 2 hours before the pregame, so like 9:30 a.m. local. And, you know, I'll walk out of there at 8 p.m. at night. So, you know, that sounds heroic. And then I skip the part about us being in a tent with three massive heaters.
Yeah.
Which they never had before. But when I came back on board CFL 7 years ago, I think my first call was to Nicole, who's our, you know, our fixer, our Mr. Wolf. And I said, Mr. Wolf, I need like massive heaters in there because I'm going to die because I'm soft as can be. So Carlo, soft, me still outside, but still kind of soft.
JD, Dave mentioned the trip to Winnipeg. And in the most recent edition of the Rubber Boots podcast, you had Rod Smith on and you guys discussed your plans that perhaps some adult beverages might be had at a bar. And listen, Rod Smith is a living legend, an unbelievable broadcaster, a great guy to hang out with. I've been very fortunate to do so on a number of occasions. Can you give us any hints, any, you know, nods in the right direction about what could be transpiring in Winnipeg, just so we can let the locals know what to be on the lookout for?
Well, the locals can help us out. I know you have a lot of Winnipeg people that listen to you online. I need a place to go. First of all, I want to clarify, as I did on the pod, like it's not like the night before the game or something. Rod is the utmost of professionals.
Oh. Of course.
And that's kind of taboo. But when you come in the day early, and that's kind of the key in travel, and it doesn't happen a lot in our business because of difficulty, but when you come in, when you have the extra night before, which, by the way, now I'm thinking of, I'm flying Saturday morning, so I've blown it, and I won't be able to do this. Rod's probably coming in Friday, because that's the veteran move, and then you have a night to, where you can recover on Saturday and then be ready for Sunday. So I don't know that it's going to happen unless I can change my flight and get out there on Friday night, because you never, never, first rule of television, want to miss an opportunity to sit down and have a couple of beverages with Roddy.
Oh, absolutely. Radio, you can get away with having a couple of drinks the night before, but TV, you need to look sharp.
Well, I look bad even. The worst thing about me, you know, I have those bags under my eyes, is I will, like, not go out 3 nights in a row and get 9 hours of sleep, and then people go, hey, Duffy looks like he was on a real bender last night.
Well, you hang out with Puffy, man. What do you expect?
Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, when you ride shotgun with Sean Puffy Cameron, I mean, there's a certain thing that you are linked towards. And
here, just before I leave you, so we're doing the Rubber Boots podcast this week, and we had Jennifer Jones on, who, of course, just qualified for a second Olympics, Canada's best curler. And I said to Puffy, you know, we don't usually have guests, as you know, AK. And I said, Puffy, she's coming on at 1. So please, let's all get on at 12:50 so we're prepared and we at least look like professionals, which we never do on this podcast when we have a guest like this. There she is, Jennifer Jones, 1 o'clock, no Puffy. 1:11, Puffy pops on. Oh, sorry, guys, I fell asleep.
Oh, boy. What a disaster. Well, it's tough. Wow. Do you have any CFL picks for us this week, JD? Argos, Ticats?
I'll be looking for you for help on this, as I always do in my predictions. I was 1-1 on the weekend where I was right on the Ticats and wrong on the Stamps, which I believe you were probably the same, right? Didn't I lean
was,
on you last
yes.
week?
Yes, so I had the Stamps.
And you know what? My gut was to go with Sasky the whole time, but you and let's just say another person who's very good at these things both convinced me that Calgary was better at too many positions. So screw you guys. I'm actually not going to lean on you this week, but I am going to go. I think Saskatchewan, if you saw the reactions after that was kind of their Grey Cup, and they'll never say that, but you can always see in the team when a victory is, you know, the victory that mattered the most to them, whether they want to consciously admit it or not. And so I think Winnipeg will be all business and they're just too good. And the other side, that's a little dicier. But I'm going to go Hamilton. I'm just going to go. It's hard. I've seen too many teams lose with a chance to go to the Grey Cup when the Grey Cup's in their hometown. But in this case, I thought they really sturdied themselves after playing awful in the first half of that game or the first quarter and a half or whatever it was. So I'm going to take Hamilton and Winnipeg in the Grey Cup.
It's disappointing. We're the home of the Argos here on TSN 1050, JD. You got to play to your audience just a little bit. I mean,
yeah, that was a mistake.
Yeah,
could we do a retake for the?
yeah, exactly. This isn't live, is it? Oh, apparently this is live.
I got to go Argos, AK. I just think it's their year. The bye week will really help them, and just deeper all around. So Argos by 10.
I love it.
You can isolate
JD.
That.
Safe travels. Bundle up. I imagine it'll be cold out there in Winnipeg. We appreciate the time as always, my man.
Okay, thanks, guys. See you faster. Right,
that's James Duffy.
Thanks, James.
And I did see the Jennifer Jones interview on the Rubber Boots podcast. Very entertaining stuff from those guys, of course, as always. Love to hear from our next guest, Josh Lewenberg, who has had a big exclusive on his own show at 10 a.m. alongside Nikki Reyes, Pascal Siakam. One-on-one, so that should be very intriguing. We have not heard that much from Pascal about the offseason that was. We remember his infamous "the guy" comments in the New York Times, and he's had an up-and-down start to this season. I think that's fair to call it, so we'll talk to J.Lew about that interview, what we can expect, and what we can expect from the Toronto Raptors as they host the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, we have a final, I guess not the final, the third clue for the pair of Raptors tickets for the Raptors and the Wizards on Sunday. Now, we've given away a clue in each hour of the show. Here's number 3. This player has won a championship in 3 different professional leagues.
Wow.
This player has won a championship in 3 different professional leagues. So we gave away a clue in the 6 a.m. hour, in the 7 a.m. hour. Yeah, it's 9:10, but that's the third clue now. And if you missed any of the first 2 clues, go back in the podcast and subscribe. I believe we're number 66 in iTunes. We want to be top 50 by the end of today. And with your help, our delightful audience, we can do just that. Back with Josh Lewenberg on First Up next.